When I was 16, I was in a car accident, and I ended up in the hospital being pushed on a gurney from test to test and forced to drink a big gulp-sized beverage of a liquid that's express purpose was to light up my insides like a Christmas tree. And as I was being pushed from x-ray to x-ray, the doctors assured me that this was all just a precaution, that I was fine. And I knew I was fine because I was a teenage suburban girl. The kind of bad things that happened to me involved boys and mean friends, and on the very rare occasions I was paying enough attention to notice, school. They didn't involve car accidents and hospitals. At one point they told me that my parents had arrived and they were going to push me past them. And while I knew I was fine, I figured this was probably going to be scary for them, so I was determined to smile and make jokes and show them how fine I was. And the first thing I saw was my dad, my big, strong, personal hero of a dad, the guy that chased away the kids with a shaving cream every Halloween. And he looked terrified, as scared as I had ever seen him, if I had ever really seen him look scared at all. He looked like he was going to cry. And I hadn't cried this whole time. I didn't cry when the car that I was in skidded off the road, or when the guardrail that was supposed to stop us launched us into the air, and we hit a tree and rolled down a 50-foot ravine into another tree. I didn't cry when one of the other kids in the car kicked me in the face and broke my nose, or when the firefighters came and had to rip the roof of the car off to get us out and handed us up the ravine like we were buckets of water. In fact, when they pronounced my name wrong, I actually corrected them. But seeing my dad like that, I lost it. I just bawled. And it turned out I wasn't fine. I had broken my back, one of the vertebrae in my back, my third lumbar, to be specific. And I know that I was lucky, that I should have felt lucky. A friend of mine had seen the accident driving to the mall with her mother, and they assumed that everyone in the car was dead. It just seemed like the kind of thing you couldn't survive, and we all survived. I was the most seriously injured. And I didn't feel lucky, even though I should have. And after talking to the doctors, my parents decided that rather than put a bunch of needles in my back, or pins in my back, the best thing to do, because I was young and healthy, was to put me on bed rest and wait for the bones to fuse together. Of course, being young and healthy, the last thing I wanted to do was lie in a bed and wait for my bones to fuse together. It really makes watching the grass grow sound exciting. And when I say bed rest, I don't mean like when you stay home sick from work and mostly you stay in bed, but maybe you get up and make yourself some soup or put a movie in or go to the bathroom. I could move my arms and my legs and my head from side to side, but from here to here, I was totally immobilized. I spent 2 weeks in the hospital, and from there, I went home to a rented hospital bed in my parents' house. And I went from being a 16-year-old cheerleader to being a 16-year-old infant. My mother had to give me a sponge bath every day. I had a bedpan. And long after any of us thought it would happen, my parents were once again wiping my ass. There was even a baby monitor in the room so that I could call up for my mom if I needed to. It was a little bit humiliating. But the worst part was that the room that I was in was right next to the front door. And, you know, life goes on when bad things happen to you. And generally that's supposed to be a very, you know, supposed to make you feel better to realize that. But people would come to the house and they'd be laughing and smiling and coming to see my brothers and my parents. And then they would see me in the hospital bed with my two black eyes and their faces would just fall. I mean, that was the effect I had on people at 16. I ruined their day. Of course, it wasn't all bad. You know, I got to watch a lot of TV. I read a lot of books, some of which were actually assigned by my tutors. And my parents had given me this mechanical arm to allow me to reach things that were out of my grasp, which was anything that wasn't on my hospital bed. But it wasn't very dexterous, so it really wasn't good for picking things up. It was, however, great for poking your little brother if he gets close to you, which was, you know, hours of fun. In fact, nothing as an older sibling makes you feel more normal than having your little brother go, "Quit it! Quit it!" And I realized, looking back on it, that I wasn't the only person trapped in that room or in that house. My mother was trapped too. She had 4 kids, and the youngest one was now 12. She probably thought she was finally getting her life back. And now she had to take care of the giant baby. She really never left the house, occasionally if my dad was home or my grandparents, but mostly she was as trapped there as I was. One time, she really needed to leave, and my little brother was the only person who was home. So she brought him into my room, and she went over with us what to do in a variety of emergency situations. The last one was fire. In case of a fire, my little brother was to call the was to call 911 and wait outside, and when the firefighters got there, tell them that his invalid sister was trapped inside. I loved being called an invalid. And, I'm sorry. And I was kind of a smartass anyway, and I really hadn't had much of a venue for my smartassery at this point. So I really couldn't resist asking my mom what we should do if the fire started in the room that I was in. Waiting outside for the firefighters while your invalid sister burns to death is not very cool. My mother said that in that case, my little brother, who was, as I said, 12 and not exactly physically imposing, was to pull the mattress off the bed, me on top of it, somehow making sure to keep me perfectly straight so my bone didn't slip, and drag me out the front door. But Mom, I said, what if the fire starts in the bed? And she looked at me and my brother and said, forget it, I'm not going. Well, you know, eventually I convinced her that I wasn't actually gonna set the house on fire. And that, considering the fact that I couldn't move at all, I really couldn't get into a lot of trouble in the 30 minutes she planned on being out of the house. And, you know, about 4 months after the accident, I took my second set of first steps on feet that had rounded a little bit on the bottom, like a baby's from disuse. And I went back to school in a brace, walking like a caricature of an old man, which, when you're a junior in high school, is hot. And, eventually, I started to get my life back, and my mother got her life back, and I became the ridiculous, loud, running around teenager I was destined to be. And my body went from being a prison to being what it is for all teenage girls, the focus of all my insecurities.